I will we'll start with the set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, have grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify you today by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, we're going to start a vision for you, and then when I finish a vision for you, I'll decide if I want to do one of the stories that I haven't done before. I'll see. On the Saturday meeting, we're at Bill's story, and we'll be finishing that. We'll start right through the book. And I've been doing these spiritual awakening talks, and I did part five yesterday, and I'll probably take me two or three more to finish. Right now I'm talking about how do I get the spiritual awakening? What does it look like? How do I know when I have it and don't have it? And we're going to look at a vision for you. And, you know, I was looking at the book, and I show the people on Zoom. I don't know if you could see, but it's got a lot of notes on it. I've used this book for a long time. This is my second book, and we're going to celebrate finishing 14 years next Saturday. So that will be the start of our 15th year. And this chapter is really it's powerful. There's AA history in it. There's tremendous spiritual principles. And I think the last couple pages are really, you can't even describe them. If you're in recovery and you read page 164, you can't help but get emotional. Especially when you feel like this is the end of the instructions on how we recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And it's a vision for me. They're writing a vision for me. And a vision is an act or power of anticipating that which will or may come to be. And, you know, we always talk about sometimes we sell ourselves short, you know, when we come in on what we expect or what we want. And I think their vision is great, but I think they sold themselves short on what would happen. They had no clue in 1938 when this chapter was written, and it was published early in 1939. And it says, for most normal folks, I don't know what normal means, but I think they're implying it's not us. And it says, drinking means conviviality, which is friendliness, companionship, and colorful imagination. And it means release from care, now boredom and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. Now, how does that apply to us who are abnormal? Well, what's the release? I drink for release from what? Freedom from the bondage of self. I drink so that the promises will come true. We talk about the promises that they come true when we get to the ready to do step 10. But we drank because alcohol gave us peace and serenity. It gave us a freedom from fear. It changed the way we saw things. And then I wrote release from what? Living separated from God. Living in the spiritual illness. And so alcohol becomes very powerful. It can do that. Because when we realize what alcohol can do for us, and we can do for me what I could not do for myself, then it starts to have power over me. It's a liquid in a bottle. Can you imagine your whole life is ruined by a liquid in a bottle? Now, we're not drinking shampoo. We don't have a desire for that, do we? Or we're not drinking gallons of milk every night, but alcohol does something to us that changes the way we feel. And it releases us from boredom and worry. And what am I worrying about? Running the world, that it won't go my way, right? I won't get what I want. And remember, worry is when we play what? God. And worry is when I'm relying on who? Self, rather than God. Self-reliance failed me. And so it becomes very powerful. This famous speaker, I really love him. He's long gone, but in 1981 he gave a talk, Father Bill W. And you can still get it on XA Speakers. He said that alcohol damages a part of our brain, and that whenever we need release from living in the now, that part of the brain is activated and says, get a drink. And it may not even be conscious. And when that part of the brain says, get a drink, Michael, nothing can stop it. I don't have any power to stop it. Did anybody have power to stop that? You might stop it for a day or two, but remember, at certain times, you cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago. And when you're drinking, you feel joyous intimacy with everybody and a feeling that life is good. Now, how did I feel before I drank? I might have felt life was good, but alcohol make it better, right? Mm-hmm. And then I might have felt like life isn't that good, and I need a drink. And so it changes how I feel. But it says, and now they're going to talk about the last days. This is a vision that describes, it's almost like the book of Romans describing our hopeless condition and why we need help. In Romans, it's why we need the righteousness of Christ to cover us, because we have none on our own. And here they're describing how the alcoholic, without God, there's no hope. And they're going right now to the end. But not so with us in the last days of heavy drinking. Now, when we started drinking, it worked, right? And then our mind knew it would work, and that's why it becomes powerful over us. But not with us in the last days of heavy, I wrote thinking, no, it says drinking. That was a joke, nobody laughed. I'm off tonight. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. And I think that's true. At the end, our lives are so miserable. And we're in this spiral, at least I was, that, you know, I never want to forget how bad. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning, longing to enjoy life as we once did. And that's when alcohol worked. And in a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. Somehow we're going to be able to control and enjoy our drinking. Remember, it says that's the, every alcoholic has this desire that they want to control and enjoy their drinking. And until they understand that that's never going to happen, there's no hope for them. And it says there was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. So ask yourself, how did you withdraw from life itself? I drank in the basement. I don't know about it. A lot of people like the garage. Our garage was too messy. I mean, wasn't an option. We withdraw from life itself, and we use alcohol to withdraw from the now, right? To just draw from the situation. And as we become subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens, inhabitants of his man realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. Now, I wrote the withdraw from society, and we withdraw from life itself, and then as we do, this chilling vapor that is loneliness settles down. So that's where we are, a chilling vapor, a vapor that comes over us, and it's this loneliness. And he says it becomes, it thickens, ever becoming blacker. So it just keeps getting worse. And it says, some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. I know nobody here sought out sordid places, but maybe Bill did. Hoping to find, that was another joke, find understanding, companionship. We want to be understood. And here's a key word that I just saw, approval. My whole life I wanted approval, right? And I wanted to feel good based upon what people thought of me. And it says, momentarily we did, then would come oblivion and an awful awakening to face the four hideous horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And so the four horsemen is from Revelation 6, I believe. Right, Russ? Mm-hmm. And the seven seals, the Lamb of God opens the thing, and the four horsemen come in. And terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And I was full of fear. I guess that's terror. But I think terror describes it. I was afraid of everything. I was bewildered. How did I get into this? I was frustrated that I couldn't fix it. And then I despaired. I didn't know if there was any hope for me. And that was right before God intervened in my life. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And the ones who don't understand it probably are can't separate the truth from the false. They're living in the lie, and maybe they don't want to face the truth. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. So he says serious drinker, and I wrote, I wrote here, instead of a spiritual awakening, when we're at the end, we don't awaken the God, we awaken the terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Think about that. And then we're going to go from that to go to awakening to God. And all that will change. So a serious drinker, I wrote, not yet defeated, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. He's doing great. I think he's trying to convince himself. Does it sound like that? Yeah, this is great. I can do this. One of the, remember he, the, Fred said he thought he was making too much of this because he was doing so well, and he thought he was just making too much of this not drinking business. And then of course he got drunk on this trip on a perfect day. We smile at such a sally, which is a witty or lively remark, especially one made as an attack or as a diversion or retort. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He's trying. He fools himself. He fools himself from what? From the truth. Inwardly, he would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with them. And so he will presently try the old game again because he hasn't quit for good. He hasn't made that decision to be quit for good. And until you're done, he wasn't done. He was still thinking that he could get away with it. And when you're completely defeated, you're really not thinking about drinking at that point. You just want a way out. And you're seeking God. And it says, with the desperation of a drowning man. And he will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. And why aren't people happy about their sobriety? Because they're still running the show. They're not drinking, but they haven't done any work yet. They're not seeking God. And so they're at step zero. Or they do steps one, two, three and drink. Or they haven't enlarged their spiritual life like Jim. But if we're not happy in our sobriety, if we're not at peace, then why would I not be at peace? Because I'm still running the show. I'm still separated from God. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. that's a bad point, right? Because you can't imagine living without it, and you can't live with it. So what can you do? But that's why this book is so important, because this book has the directions so that when we're at that point, we have a way out. And then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off point. He will wish for the end. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? I mean, it really, and yet you can be like that, and you can be where I am today years later, or we had Brian celebrate several years, and we can get out from that. And it says, we have shown how we have gotten under, out from under. And they showed you that in the book up to this point, and especially in the first 88 pages. On working steps 1 through 11, and then the chapter on working with others. And they've given us specific directions how they've recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And you say, yes, I'm willing. But are you 100% willing? That's the point. Because that's what it takes. You have to be 100% willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum? Now notice, the person's dying, but they don't want to be consigned to a life where they're stupid, boring, and glum. You get it? So it shows how crazy our thinking is. I've heard people come in and their lives are a complete effing mess. And they go, you mean I have to go to meetings? I have to go to 2 a week? You know, 2 hours a week. You get it? Or they're putting all these conditions and they can't see it. They can't see it. I may have said that. I can't remember. But when I came in, I was ready to do anything. But I'm consigned to a life like some righteous people I see. Do you think he's judging? Do you think the alcoholics judge? I don't want to be like these other people. You see, we're Pharisees, we're dying, but we're Pharisees judging other people. And that's why we don't get better, because we won't give that up. We won't give up running the show, judging others, separating ourselves. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I have you a sufficient substitute? And the substitute for alcohol, dependence on alcohol, remember alcohol is a symptom of our disease. And we substitute alcohol for who? God, because alcohol is called the spirit. It's spiritual, makes you feel spiritual. And we substitute alcohol for God. And so it says, yes, there is a substitute. And it's and the substitute that we talk about in the book is the steps. And then it says there is a substitute, it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. And notice it doesn't say the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous of a fellowship of the Spirit. That's what they envisioned. That was their vision, that we were fellow Spirit seekers. We were in fellowship with God. It says that on page 164 at the end of this chapter. It says we will hope you will join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. Capital F, capital S. And it's the fellowship in, and it's God's fellowship together of believers. And that's really what the church was supposed to be, wasn't it, Russ? Russ isn't listening. He can't hear me. And so there you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. And it used to be alcohol was the release, but the fellowship in AA with God is our new release. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship in you, so will you. And then that may be the fellowship promises in the big book. What a fellowship with God looks like is that life will have meaning. You'll have freedom from care, boredom, and worry. You'll have satisfying years ahead, and you will find this fellowship. How is that to come back? Where am I to find these people? Well, that's a good question. See, nowadays there's AA everywhere. We have like 8,000 meetings in Topeka, and there's AA everywhere, and AA is evolved, and we have AANA and NAAA, and we have discussion meetings, and but in these, when this book was written, there was no AA. There were only three groups, and one was in Akron, one was in New York, and one was in Cleveland. There were about 80 people sober. And it says, so how am we going to meet these friends? And this is their vision. And it says, near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly because no human power can relieve their alcoholism like people in a sinking ship. Does that sound like page 17 when it says we are like people who've been shipwrecked and we've hit the iceberg and we're in the Titanic and we hit the iceberg and we get in the water and somebody reaches their hand out to us and puts us in the lifeboat. And what it became, started out as the flimsy reed that reaches out to me, becomes the powerful hand of God. At least that's what it says in the book, and that's true for me. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds. They had no idea. They thought 100 would be a lot of people. High and low, rich and poor. So it didn't matter. We're all alcoholics. Some of us are different circumstances in our life, but the spiritual malady is all the same. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what does it is required to be a fellow? See, that's a key point here. And a fellow is sharing a particular activity, quality, or condition. And to be like a fellow of the American College Physicians, I had to do 3 years of post-medical school training in internal medicine and then take a 2-day, 10-hour, 20-hour exam or 16-hour exam. And I had to pass that to become a fellow. And then to be an oncologist, hematologist, I'd do 3 more years and I had to take 2 more exams. So there's something that's required to be a fellow. It's not just coming into the meeting. It's a commitment. It's doing the deal. And they envisioned everybody that came to the meeting was working the steps. And they envisioned everybody would be working the steps out of this book. And that's why they wrote it. And that might be why the success rate was much higher early on. Because the people didn't want to do it, they didn't even go to the meeting. They never got to the meeting. Among them you will make lifelong friends. I've made lifelong friends. And you will be bound to them. And how are we bound together? What's the cement that binds us together? Do you remember it says on page 17? It says just the fact that we're all shipwrecked and we shared the common disease won't hold us together. What holds us together? The common solution, the steps, the program of recovery. And it says that's the cement that binds us. That's page 17. That's a very important page. If you're listening, you haven't read it for a while, you might want to read it tonight. And why? We're bound to them with new and wonderful ties because we have escaped disaster together. And bound means tied together, and we've escaped disaster together. And you see that when people you've known for years are celebrating a birthday, or let's say they've been gone for a while, out of town, or they move and they come back, and you see them, and there's this joy of seeing them because you've been in this common walk, this common fellowship together. And it says you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. And what is the journey that we're supposed to take here? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed what? Our path. And then on page 100 it says, you and the new man must walk hand in hand in the path of spiritual progress, right? So that's the journey we're on, the path to God. And what is the big book but a treasure map to God? That's all it is. The big book is not the treasure. We don't worship the book, but we worship God, and how I find him is contained in these pages. And then you will know what it means, and this is really great, to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. Practice love forever. Love your neighbor as yourself. Give of yourself. And you will learn, well, I hadn't read it. I hadn't studied this morning. I usually do. It says then in the next line, you'll learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. That's the full meaning. When you're giving of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life, is there any better feeling than that? We used to feel good when we got things or things went away, but now I feel good when I'm in service. And the more you love, the more you love others, the more you'll love yourself. It comes back. So people who don't like themselves, just love others. Practice loving others, and then you'll love yourself. It happens automatically because you feel God's love when you do that. And you love yourself by doing for others. And you build self-esteem. Remember, you build self-esteem in AA by doing esteemable acts. It's acts. You have to do these actions. Remember, it says on page 84, love and tolerance is our code, and when we're disturbed and we ask God to remove what's disturbing us and we make amends and we reach out, it says we resolutely turn our thoughts to those we can help. And it doesn't say that you have to work with an alcoholic here. It's everybody you encounter. Remember the prayer that we're supposed to pray for the family is give me love, patience, and tolerance for the family every day, but I say give that to me for every human being I meet. And I shoot for maybe 80%, 90%. That's pretty good, right, for alcoholics. But you see what I'm saying? That's what we're supposed to practice. LPTKCC, love, patience, tolerance, kindness, consider, compassion. And remember, what's the only thing lacking in any relationship, any relationship that I'm in, any interaction? The love I don't bring into it. So if I bring love in every situation, I may not get it back, but I'll handle it well. And what do they mean by bringing love? You're bringing God. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they arise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? That is a good question, isn't it? And we can tell people how we did that. And this book is telling them how they did it, and then we should be able to tell that to someone else. And that really should be the purpose of meetings, is for us to share the path that we took to find this relationship with my Creator that gives me a different way to live. And the practical answer is these as happiness, they can happen with you. And how do you become willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can help you, that can restore you to sanity? AA is supposed to help you believe that, because you see people in AA who have the same problem as you and something's happened to them. So if you believe, if I believe that Stu can get better, or like Russ was a mess, or Scott, or myself, they could look at me and say, boy, he was a mess. He seems a little bit better today. Then you'll believe that this can work for you. And that's what this book is. This book is a testimony of what they did, and if you do what they did, you can have what they had. And you can't argue with it. People don't like the book, that's fine. But it's a testimony. Some people don't like Paul. I heard that today. I don't like Paul. Ugh, he's terrible. Well, I said change your mind. But, it's his testimony. You can't argue with someone's testimony. Should you wish them above all else to be willing to make use of your experience, we will sure they should come. So the practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should I wish that these things happen with me above all else? Now, what's above all else? Where does it say above everything? It says, above everything, we must be rid of this selfishness or it's going to kill me. And so it says, above all else, nothing should be more important than my relationship with, seeking my relationship with God and having this program work and have him work in my life, and I'd be willing to make use of our experience. So am I willing to take the actions that they did? Am I willing to take use of, we are sure they will come? That's a promise. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. My recovery is a miracle. It's a miracle when an alcoholic can stay sober, right? And it's happening every day. And then I'll end with this. Our hope is that when this, it's a really good chapter, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's good information, isn't it? I think everybody's asleep in the meeting. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, now when they launched the book, they had what, 1,000 copies or something? There's what, how many now, 150 million? Who knows? It's helped a lot of people. So many languages I can't even imagine. Launched on the world tide of alcoholism, and here's what their vision was. Defeated drinkers will seize upon it. Not just say, oh, I'll read this. Seize upon it. Why? Because this is a life raft. This is a life preserver thrown out to us when we're drowning in the ocean. This book is a life preserver. We'll seize upon it, but seizing won't do many good unless I follow its suggestions. And then many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still other sick ones and fellowships of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fellowship of people that seized upon the book, followed its suggestions, and then they would approach others, and then AA would spring up in each city and hamlet, havens for those who must find a way out. That's what it's supposed to be. AA's changed a lot in 82 years. 83 years, maybe more, because it started in 85. And so this is a way out place. This is a place of salvation, should be. And the book is the guide. Follow its suggestions, approach other people, and then the fellowship, at least two people will start a fellowship. It'll spring up, and then you'll find someone else, and then that's how it grew. And it started with a few people, and look at it today. There were 12 apostles at Pentecost, and how many people are there now who are in the church? Think about that. 12 people. And so it works. I think that's the, what we tell people, it works. If you work it, we know that. And this book is telling as a vision. Do you see how it's written? It's very, very well done. I'll stop with that, and we'll pick it up next week.